Let us pray. O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Dearest Mother,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Thank you for inviting me back to Sunnyside. Reading tonight comes from a book entitled This Pilgrim's Progress. It's a correspondence with Joel Goldsmith by Barbara Mary Mule. And Joel Goldsmith was a wonderful God-man, born turn of the century. And this is a letter dated September 1961. Dear friend, the best answer to the subject of bomb-proof shelters is a joke recently to the effect that, on the subject of bomb-proof shelters, this man says he is not going to have one because he wouldn't like to find himself above with the kind of people who buy shelters. To think about that a little bit. If you're going to survive, then you're going to be with all the other survivalists. And I do think it would be a pretty terrible thing to come out of a shelter above, if such a thing is possible, and find that practically all the rest of our world was gone. When this Berlin situation came up, I did my work, and I did it with a few hundred students around the world in groups while traveling, and finally came to a complete sense of peace on the subject. I do not believe that a major catastrophe could take place and my inner soul be so completely at peace. And regardless of what eventualities must come or should come, be assured that I will stand on the first verse of the 91st Psalm and the 15th chapter of John. And on top of this, of course, I always have the major principle of the infinite way, which tells me that there are neither good appearances nor bad appearances, because the nature of all appearance is illusory. And how can there be a good illusion or a bad illusion? An illusion is an illusion, and that settles it. In 1948, I met a religious fanatic who feared the coming of the end of the world and who had quite some means. And so he bought himself a piece of property that had a natural stone cave on it. And he kept it stocked with 6 months' food supply and also a stock of underwear and outer clothing, overcoats, gloves, etc. Owing to the perishable nature of the food, he had to destroy this food every 6 months and put in a new stock. I guess every so often he had to change the clothes too. And for all I know, he may still be doing it. The question I would like to know is this: what difference does it make to the world whether this man lives or dies? What is he contributing to the world? What does the sniveling life amount to? That scared, frightened, cowardly existence. Personally, I think we can make a greater contribution to this world if we spend an hour every single day in spiritually knowing the truth that might prevent such a catastrophe, Because remember, there is nothing to the belief of incurable disease or impossible situations. All things are possible to God. And for as long a lifespan as I have on earth, I am going to spend it in the realization of the non-power of the world of effect and the non-power of the carnal mind. And at least I'll make a little contribution to bringing heaven on earth, even if a bomb snuffs my life out 2 or 3 or 5 or 10 years sooner than nature would take me from the scene in any event. One who is on the spiritual path is constantly being confronted with the terms, spelled with a small s, self-preservation, self-protection, self-maintenance, and safety and security from the standpoint of self. On the other hand, the same words can be spelled with a capital S. Now, what is the meaning of self-protection with a capital S? Or self-maintenance with capital S? Or self-preservation with capital S? Of course, the answer is that if God is our selfhood, we have an inbuilt preservation, protection, maintenance. If God is individual self, that is, if God is the self of the individual, then we have an inbuilt safety and security, all of which makes clear the Master's words, "I have meat the world knows not of." Just ponder that statement for a few days. "I have meat the world knows not of," and see if it doesn't reveal to you that I have a protection, I have a safety, I have security, I have peace, I have supply, I have an inner grace, and the world knows nothing of these. Because the world is seeking these outside of self. The world is seeking safety and security outside of itself, and it is seeking supply and name and fame and riches outside of itself. And yet all the time, I have the meat the world knows not of. Yes, not only I, but the group of students I have placed all around the globe and around the clock are working daily, specifically, consciously, and constantly. Before the Labor Day holiday, when the papers were telling how many accidents there would be over the long holiday, and how many deaths, etc., our group in Chicago took up specific work on this problem, with the result that throughout the entire period of the long Labor Day holiday, there was not one fatality in Chicago, and only one fatality in all of Cook County. And what is even more remarkable, yesterday we had word from Canada that over that same long holiday, from West Coast to East Coast in Canada, the accidents were at the lowest rate of any year in the past 7 years. This is a remarkable showing, but it indicates what can be done when we face the threat of death, accident, limitation without fear and with the conviction that since the carnal mind is not of God, it is not ordained with power. Let us never fear to look death in the face, because neither life nor death can separate us from the love of God. And only as we face it in the conviction that since it is not of God, it is not power or presence, can we meet the issue successfully. To fear man whose breath is in his nostrils, or to fear what princes can do unto us, or to fear what mortal man can do, is certainly not to take a spiritual stand. I know you will remember that 1959 work on the subject of impersonalization and nothingization. Only the constant remembrance of these will enable you to be of spiritual help to the world in its present situation. Please believe that all over the world there are millions of people who humanly would like to do something about this international situation. And I am sure that you must know that no one in the world wants to do more about it than the President of the United States and the heads of state in the Western world. On their shoulders rests so much responsibility, and I am sure that they are praying to God morning, noon, and night for strength, for wisdom, for judgment and decision. And you know this is not sufficient, because you know that it is only in proportion as spiritual power is brought to light that this entire Cold War and threat of a hot war will come to an end. Now, who is able to give this spiritual help? Surely not those who are frightened by it, or who permit the situation to overcome their emotions. Those who are capable of giving spiritual help will be those who do not minimize the human danger, but at the same time are not fearing man whose breath is in his nostrils, and certainly not fearing what mortal man can do. We are really doing something serious about this situation, and we are doing it every day of the week. One thing we are not doing, I can assure you, is this. We are not fearing the situation. We are not fearing what mortal man can do, nor are we minimizing the human danger. But neither do we fear death. We have come to understand the eternality of life, and that no one is going to remain on this plane forever. And so shall we not fear if we are called upon to lay down our lives in upholding freedom, justice, equity? We might actually fear to live if our government should prove to be one of those that reneges on its promises and on its commitments, but we will never be afraid to die if we are called upon to do so in upholding our government, in maintaining its word and its commitments. I would not be afraid to die, but I would certainly be afraid to live in fear of temporal power. To pray for world peace, it is necessary to face each moment with no fear of temporal power, since spirit is the all and only power. Aloha greeting, Joel. Joel Goldsmith lived in Hawaii, accounting for the aloha greeting. And reading from Paramahansa Yogananda, World Crisis. This is not a political talk. My domain is spirituality. I shall always live and act within that realm. And in the domain of spirit, I shall die. I speak only from that level of consciousness. As a youth in India, I used to mix with people of both political parties, but I join neither. I appreciated their respective points of view, but I saw that I would be able to do more good by spiritual means, for only spiritual power can truly reform the world. My lectures are of value only if they have definite effect in spiritually molding human lives. Sometime after I am gone from this earth, you will realize all I have tried to do for you. If you follow the constructive advice I shall give today, you will one day be very grateful for it. According to tradition, as a sannyasi, I am supposed to be free of material responsibilities. A monk who spends his time sitting on the banks of the Ganges in meditation. But in this country, I have had to work hard to support my large spiritual family. My portion in this life is to sacrifice and to suffer for all. Whoever comes to me in the right spirit with devotion for God will never be the same again. God has shown me how to break the secret thoughts of delusion that bind men's souls. When I give the blessing, virtue goes out of me. So come here with that spirit, and you shall receive. Most of all, I emphasize that you should get busy seeking God through meditation. Self-realization gives you the opportunity to study and to progress spiritually at home. Become a member of self-realization. Read the immortal truths in the lessons. After you have studied theoretically, you will understand everything about metaphysics. And if you practice these great teachings, you will be on the way to becoming a master. Don't wait, for you have a long way to go. I do not speak to you through emotion, but through the vibration of my own experience. God can be contacted at any moment, any day. It is possible to feel the inspiration of His presence any time, in any place, so that whenever you think of Him, His inspiration will be there. In every lovely experience, you will behold God. Just beneath the shadows of this life is His wondrous light. The universe is a vast temple of His presence. When you meditate, you will find doors opening to Him everywhere. When you have communion with Him, not all the ravages of the world can take away that joy and peace. Tonight I thought I'd speak about joy, about fear being at the root of all evil. There are said to be some different sins, so to speak, that keep us in separation from God. Now, the original definition of sin goes like this. Sin is missing the mark, like an archer who aims for the bullseye. And he misses his mark, and the arrow goes flying off askance. Then the archer needs to go back to the project of hitting the bullseye, drawing his string, aiming carefully, and practicing until he's able to hit the bullseye. Now this puts a far different connotation to the idea of sin than the one that we are often given in traditional religions today. Sin is loaded with something that is beyond our own control. Some people even propose the idea that we are born in sin, we live in sin, and we die in sin. And the best thing that we can do is to accept Jesus Christ as our Lord and Savior. And from that acceptance, we are saved. And at the end of this life, we are taken into a heaven. This view, in my consideration, is a childish one. If we are to live our life on spiritual principle, then we must come into an understanding of what our dilemma is and what is the way out of our dilemma. If we are born in sin, there is but one sin, as Mother talked about, and that is the idea of separation from God. Now, first we must ask ourselves, what is God and what is the nature of God? God is that omniscient, omnipotent, omnipresent source from which we have all sprung, from which all creation has come. Now, one might reasonably ask, why do you say that? How do you know that? We start out on the spiritual path because other spiritual masters, those who have traversed the path before us, have gone ahead and they've looked over that mountain of eternity, and there they have seen these eternal truths. They are not something of the imagination, but they are something of true and constant revelation. Every religion, every source of mystical teachings the world over teach the same thing, that we are all made up from this original creative consciousness. And so in the beginning, we take that on faith and we start out on a journey of an inner sort, where we go towards the source of our own being, who and what we truly are. Now, if we accept the idea that we are in sin, then this idea that we have missed the mark. Now, in missing the mark, we have come to believe that we are this body. And we, our lives, started with this body, and that we, as our bodies, will end when this body ends. But if we take a spiritual perspective, we start to look deeper into our lives. We see that there is more to us. We feel a calling to take us further. And in that calling, if we are called in a very deep and profound way, we are told that there is a way of rising up in consciousness that takes us beyond ordinary ways of knowing. And through this, we cure ourselves of this condition of sin, that is, separation from the oneness with this all-encompassing consciousness of which we are a part. In that discovery, we discover that we are one with all. But in order to do this, we have to go through every single state of consciousness in which ignorance exists within our minds. It's as if you had a home, and in that home you had a basement. And in the basement were things that have been left there from long ago, things you have completely forgotten about. But through the advent of time, these things started to disintegrate and to get in a very bad condition. The odors of these things began to rise up through the heating vents. Maybe even living creatures from the basement started their ascent up through the vents and into the main floor. Now, the main floor is your conscious mind. The basement of this house is your subconscious mind. The subconscious mind is filled with thoughts and feelings and experiences based from long ago in some instances, and everything that you have done through this lifetime. Those events seek expression through your conscious mind, but we're very clever, we are, as human beings. We seek to control the emergence of that subconscious mind into the conscious mind. But the problem is, these things just don't go away. They continue to take on greater and greater life and to seek to find expression in our lives. And it results in neurotic and can result in psychotic behavior within our own lives. And so to cure this problem requires that we empty out the basement. We clean it out completely. Now we must have great strength, great determination, great ability in order to do this. In fact, this strength and ability and determination must be so great that it actually takes us beyond ourselves. We become a living embodiment of that spiritual truth, that spiritual light that we are told we are born a part of, that consciousness made manifest in us. And if it were not for that grace, if it were not for that pre-existent truth within us, we would not be able to do this. But because this wonderful grace exists within us, we open ourselves to it, and we find that we have that determination, we have that strength, we have that ability to face all the things that we have done in our outward journey from the one beautiful, pure, singular consciousness from which we have all come. And so all this sin, so to speak, all the ways that we have missed the mark, comes into our mind. Now, this comes in a couple of different ways. One is, we experience this sin as anger. Now, anger, you might say, has fear at its root. If you analyze your anger very deeply, you'll see that when you become angry or frustrated with something, it is because the world or people in particular are not cooperating with you. They are acting in opposition to you. You come to the belief that you are limited. And in that limitation, that you're not able to win cooperation, therefore you're not able to get what you want. Because of that, frustration ensues. And after frustration comes anger. This is all predicated on the fear that you are not enough. You are insufficient. You are incomplete. And in order to have that happiness, in order to have that perfection, you have to find it by completion through something outside of you. And inevitably, there will be people and there will be situations that oppose you in this. And so it is this fear that we are incomplete, but you see, this is not the truth. The truth is, you are already complete. You are already sufficient. You are already one with the all consciousness. Only you don't know it. So out of that sin or that error from which we have devolved from, we have taken on this association that we are insufficient, that we are not enough. So anger has at its roots fear. Lust is another thing. Now, you might say that being born into a human body, lust is a natural condition. And when we come into the age of puberty, the hormones and the other structural aspects of our body and metabolism reach out in reproductive ways that we want to reproduce ourselves, essentially. We want to prolong ourselves. Now, one of the roots of this, if you were to think about it very deeply and analyze it deeply, is that it is a fear of our own mortality. One of the motivations for having children is our fear that we will one day die, and it is through our children that we will continue our progeny, that our legacy will continue in this world. Another deep subconscious fear is the idea of eternal youth, and sexuality being associated with youth is a way of continuing our youth and thinking of ourselves as being young. And so beyond our own physical impulse towards sexuality, there is so much that drives us out of fear. When you look at how animals live, most of them have very short mating seasons through the year, and even those do not last for many, many years. Human beings are different from this standpoint. And if you look at the advertising in our society, if you look at all the ways that we titillate ourselves with sexual energy and sexual impulses, it goes way beyond anything that we might say that's strictly relegated to reproductive processes that are required of us biologically. And so you look at these different ways that we are motivated and induced into sexual thinking, and you see that fear of death, fear of old age, fear of disease keeps us rooted in sexuality in an inordinate amount of time and energy. And so much of the lust that we have in this life, particularly the out of balance aspect of lust in this world, comes about through fear. Greed is the third aspect of sin, or the way that we experience separation. Greed, once again, is greed for things of this world, the material things of this world, and that also includes the power that is derived through having material things. This is driven also by fear. Our needs are really very few. But when they are multiplied again and again and again, and yet that is not enough, and we must go out and we must buy more, we must accumulate more, we must have more. This is all predicated upon a fear that we will not have enough, a fear that, even more so, we are not enough. And the only way that we can become enough is by having more things. Of course, this isn't very effective at all. So the more that we acquire, the more desperate we become, because we realize that we're not meeting the need. And so more and more we acquire, and more we become empty, realizing it is a fruitless task to try to fill ourselves with all of these material things. So through this analysis, we can see that anger and lust and greed are all driven by fear. Most of us would not know a life, what it is like to live a life without fear, because we experience it in so many different ways. Fear of death, fear of old age, fear of disease. And when we enter onto the spiritual path, we are not immune to fear. In fact, if anything, we are confronted with it more squarely than ever. The moment we try to still this mind, the moment we try to come into relationship with the deepest elements of ourselves, fear immediately comes to the surface and challenges us. It presents all kinds of images in our mind, or it is just a growing feeling that's inside of us that insidiously tries to push us aside from seeking a spiritual union with the all consciousness. It works within us, perhaps just in a very subtle way. Just, well, perhaps today I won't meditate. Perhaps today I'm going to just ignore living a spiritual life, and I'll find other things to fill my life with. Not because they're bringing us real happiness, but because we are somehow caught up in this fear. How do we deal with that fear when it comes up? Let us look at the different ways. One is we have wonderful resources, and one of them is called faith. When we see that the saints and the spiritual masters of this world have all spoken to us about this light that is within us, that these spiritual masters are actively involved in helping us to draw us into that light, then we can use a shortcut method. You know, one of the things about morals and ethics and other things that have been handed down to us, they're really principles that have been given to us that can help create a shortcut. It's like if you have your child, and as you're raising your child, you teach them about truthfulness. You teach them about courage. You teach them about seeing a job through to its end. Why? Because you know through your own experience that if an individual lives their life with those core principles, that they will be happier, they will be more productive, that they will engender better relationships in their life. Now, they could be left to their own devices and figure it out on their own, but how many lifetimes has it taken an individual to grow from the darkened consciousness, where we do whatever is convenient to us in the moment, and to where we take on a greater understanding that what we do not only affects ourselves, but people around us, and that effect we cannot be separated from. So if we uplift other people, if we are for the betterment of other people, we will enjoy the fruits of that. If we do things that degrade life, that degrade ourselves, that degrade other people, then we will suffer the effects of that also. And so, by teaching and learning these moral precepts and principles, we create a shortcut by which we can evolve in a conscious way more quickly if we can accept it that way. Now, the problem sometimes comes in that we accept an awful lot from our society, from our family, from our friends, that aren't very true. They don't have much efficacy to them. And because of that, and because they're untested, we live life more blindly, and rather than being a shortcut, we just simply substitute a false conviction for being alive and aware of what we're doing and what the consequences of what we're doing. So we should test everything that comes to us. We should test its efficacy. Is it true? And this quest for truth, this desire to know the truth, is one of the greatest helps that we can have in ascending from the human to the divine. And so this is something that we can really depend on, we can really strive towards, is finding this truth within us. And so it's out of this desire for truth that we confront all of these things that come up inside of us, including this fear. And it's through this desire for truth and depending on the light within us and the spiritual masters who have come to help us that we can encounter this fear and overcome it. Sri Yukteswar told the story one time that when he was a small child, that his mother warned him that if he wasn't good, that there was some kind of evil spirit, a ghost, who was in the closet, and she would get that ghost and have it go after him if he wasn't good. Well, he immediately ran to the closet and opened it up to see this ghost. He wanted to see it. And of course, he saw that there was nothing there. He used that as an example, that when a fear is faced, it disappears. And this is so true for all of us. This is another help that we can have with our fears. If you, say, have a fear of flying, we just had a terrible plane wreck in which some people were killed, and so sometimes people say, well, maybe I won't fly anymore, but if I do fly, I will encounter terrible fear around it. And so fear becomes the driving factor around all this. Well, as a counter to all of this fear, you could just imagine yourself, well, what if you do go for a plane ride? And let us say, for the moment, in our mind's eye, we see ourselves in that plane. Something happens to the steering system on it, and it goes into a sudden dive. Now, suddenly our life flashes before us. Our heart is pounding very quickly. Adrenaline is pushing through. And we are perhaps in a state of panic. Perhaps we are keeping our wits about us. And even though our body is reacting in this way because it's under threat of death, nevertheless, we keep a very clear mind. Let us imagine for the moment that our mind remains very clear. And we dive straight towards the ground. And our body is reacting, those people around us, their bodies are reacting. Perhaps there are screams, perhaps there's loud noise. It is quite, from a human standpoint, a terrible scene. But somehow, miraculously, inwardly, we keep a sense of calmness and observation about the whole thing. Suddenly, with great impact, the plane crashes, and all aboard are killed, including ourselves. Suddenly, we're not in the body. The consciousness leaves the body. We look down on the body, on our old body, the other bodies that are there, with some calm, kind of dispassionate way. We see there that all these bodies are now crushed in terms of having any life in it, but that our life is not contained to that body. The life, the intelligence, the feelings, everything is above it, and we have no fear there. We're absorbed into the light, and from that light we continue our life and our journey in God. And so there is no fear then. Now the body may have experienced fear during a crisis moment, but the mind remained calm. And through that calmness, we see it through that there is nothing truly to be afraid of. And so you can take any situation and see it through to its ending and see what's the worst thing that can happen. Let's say that you are afraid to get up in front of other people and give talks. And that's just the worst thing you could think of doing. You'd rather be any place but doing that. But somehow you're called upon to do that and you agree to do it. So you get up in front of a large group of people. And of course your worst fear is you'll get up there and, well, maybe your worst fear is you forgot to get dressed that day. But let's say you got dressed that day. And your worst fear is you get up there and you get totally tongue-tied. You've forgotten what you're going to say at all, and you're staring out at this large group of people. They're staring back at you with expectation that they're going to be entertained or informed or for whatever purpose you've come to talk to them that day. And out of that, you are totally humiliated. You can't think of a word. Nothing will come out of you. Now let us imagine that this worst case scenario happened. Finally, somebody got up, touched you on the elbow, and said, perhaps you'd like to sit down now. So you go to sit down, and somehow, miraculously, some part of your mind continues to do the observation and keeps calm. You look out on all the other people there. You hear some other speaker get up, and they're able to continue on where you had not even begun, much less left off. You feel there all the panic in your body. You feel your mind all tied up in knots, perhaps your body all tied up in knots. But with that inner calm, it slowly starts to unwind. You see that your life is still alive. that you're all right, that other people come up and express concern for you and hope that you're all right, and that you're perhaps embarrassed by what you've done, but it is not the end of the world for doing what you have done. And in this way, you continue to breathe, and you find out that you're all right, you're not dead, and you're all right, and you can go on to another day. And you begin to let it go. And you say, well, at least I made the effort to try to do something. All those other people out in the audience, they didn't even make the effort to get up in front. But at least I made that effort. And I'll live to do it another day. I'll strive to overcome that. And so you continue on with your life. Look at the different personalities in this world. Richard Nixon is an interesting one in my mind. He was dethroned, you might say, from his presidency. Maybe, to some extent, at least in our lifetime and our politics, the most humiliated man ever to exist in our political system. And yet he went on to live and eventually became respected once again. He started giving talks again. He started giving his observations once again, and people listened to him. Now this is quite a recovery. Quite a recovery. There are others who politically have been in very difficult places where they've been out of favor, and then suddenly something catches fire with them. And they recover all that they had lost before. And so you play out each one of these fears. You see the lives of other people. And you see that you cannot measure life by a single circumstance, nor even by a circumstance of death, but that you're a living, human, breathing personality. That you've come here to this earth to learn lessons, to evolve, and to ultimately gain a clear, firm foothold in this universal consciousness. And this is the purpose you have come for. And so this is another aid in with fear, is to always remember why you are really here, for what purpose you are here. And that this is an overarching priority for you, and it puts everything else into perspective. So these are some of the ways that we can deal with the fears that come up with us, and that everyone on the spiritual path will encounter fear. And that it isn't do we encounter fear, but how do we overcome it when it comes. So I'd just like to stop speaking here and just see if there's any questions about this subject or about anything in your sadhana right now. The subject of fear is a big one. If you don't mind going through a little exercise with that, walking into the place to get your glasses and feeling angry about that, if we were to operate from the assumption that there was some fear at work that was behind the anger.
The anger, probably the fact that I was needing glasses.
Right.
age.
Age.
But, and I'm sure that did, but also not having gone through that before, I didn't know what I was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So I was fumbling with that. But, and that was probably what really kind of torqued me, but just the fact that I was told rather abruptly that our insurance wouldn't pay for.
Mm-hmm.
While another lady was there getting all of her stuff done on coupons.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just like... So that kind of triggered it. It was
right.
A bunch of little things.
So sometimes it can be fear around supply. Will there be enough? And that can get translated into equality. Is there equality in the world? And do people get enough? Or do some people get seemingly more than other people get? And so there's fear around supply that can get translated into anger around fairness.
Yeah, exactly. So it was a whole bunch of little things going on.
Right. So if you were to counteract, let's say there's two primary ones. Let's just pick those two out. One is fear around age, getting older. And, you know, the three things that the Buddha encountered before he left on his spiritual quest was the issues of old age and disease and death. And I think those are three very big things in our life that we bump up against. Right. At one time or another, it actually breaks through our denial. We live in denial of those things much of the time. But there are things that break through that denial and we bump up against it. So age is one of those. And then supply is another. Will there be enough? So if you were to think about counteracting those fears inside, and you were to access inner resources that would help to stand up against the fear of supply, that there's not enough in the world, and also around age, are there things that come to mind?
I'm not sure what you're asking me to do.
Let's assuming those two things are fears that are in operation.
Okay.
And then you think, for instance, around supply. There's not enough in the world. What would be a counteracting thought?
Well, I didn't feel that there wasn't enough. I just felt like maybe, I don't know.
Well, let me put it this way. If you did affirm in yourself, there is enough for everyone in this world, would there be any reason to be feeling some anger or upset with this other woman who's there with the medical stamps and your insurance isn't covering and so on?
Pretty
ironical. Uh-huh. So if you think, there is enough for everyone. There's plenty for everyone. Would there be any reason to be upset about her getting those things?
I was never upset with her. It was just the system.
Right, the situation.
Yeah. No, you wouldn't have any. Everybody would be taken care of.
Mm-hmm. So a counteracting thought to that fear might be the affirmation. There is enough for everyone.
I came to that conclusion.
Yeah.
Before
I left. Or another variation could be, God will supply me with whatever I need.
Yeah.
And so these things can be operating just underneath the surface. It's not like we go around thinking of those things all the time, but there's a certain situation that triggers it. And we may not even be fully aware of, why did I get so angry about that? Or why did I get so frustrated with that?
It still bugs me a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about the age one?
I just have to laugh at that one.
And what does laughing do? What's
the trigger of kick dance?
Uh-huh. But if there's a counterbalancing thought around age, what would it be for you? Something that would help you to...
Age really, it means nothing.
Uh-huh.
Basically, it's a state of mind.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no age in the mind.
Mm-hmm.
So there isn't anything.
Mm-hmm. And
it's
when...
It's just the fear of not being able to function at an older age the way you do at a younger age.
Yeah.
But all of that is nothing to worry about. I mean, I don't...
Mm-hmm.
Age has not usually been an issue for me, but I think it's slowly starting to become one because I'm getting...
As we get older, yeah.
But...
And sometimes it can be like, well, this is about me getting my glasses, but I remember my grandmother, and she had these Coke bottle glasses, and she couldn't even read anymore, and she couldn't even watch the television anymore, and she wasn't even sure who walked in through the door until they were 2 inches from their face. And that kind of scares me. I don't want to be blind, you know? And so it's not even just the situation of getting some glasses, but it associates with all these much more extreme circumstances, and especially with age, if we see ourselves kind of marching towards that.
Well, the thing
we don't want to give in toward that at all.
The thing that's pushed me to finally commit or to go ahead and do glassware is the not being able to read the blackboard and then the book. And it was just sort of like push over the edge.
Mm-hmm.
I knew it was there.
So one counterbalancing idea that comes to me is just the affirmation, the thought in my mind that whatever the condition of my body, what's more important is the condition of my spirit. And even if this body were broken, but the spirit were in good condition, then all would be well.
And what you said once before that I like to add on to that,
mm-hmm.
is that the spirit's the only thing that goes with you from life to life.
Yeah. Thank goodness. Mm-hmm. We leave that broken body behind us. Mm-hmm. So that's an example of taking a specific situation and then analyzing the fear behind it and looking for an affirmation.
I was trying to.
Mm-hmm. The other would be then, what if my eyes, what if I have a big fear around going blind? Well, what if I did go blind? And then I just carry that scenario all the way through. Well, I'd still be breathing and I'd still carry on my life and it would make big, big changes. But, you know, on some basic level, I would be all right. And so it's somehow working that whole scenario through the mind and making it conscious. And then acknowledging at the end, it would make big changes for me, but I would be all right. I would be all right. And sometimes, and what we look for is the release or the shift in that fear in our body. And suddenly we just feel, we breathe a little deeper. And we feel ourselves letting go of that fear a little bit. And that's two different ways of dealing with the fear. One is a counter thought that would be an affirmation around that. And then the other is playing it all the way out to the end and saying, you know, even if it results in death, I'll still be all right. I know that I will. And by having played it through in the scenario in our head, it releases the energy. That anger is contained energy. It's where we have, because it's fear, and then we seek to strike out to push things away that seem to be a threat to us.
And that's what I was fighting,
mm-hmm.
to not do that.
Yeah.
And to look at it in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be more tolerable.
Yeah. That's a great example. Mm-hmm. I know what a great example, I think, as we all know here, that Mother went through the last 8 or 10 years of her life. She just went through physically a really difficult period in her life. And she was in her 80s, and all kinds of reasons to think about giving up or being depressed or, you know. But what I saw was she was always, I want to get back to the way that I was after having a stroke. I want my body to function the way that it did before. And the shingles that came and split her face down in half, and so terrifically painful. I want to be able to function how I was. And she just held that thought all the time. It was remarkable to me how powerfully and how stubbornly she held on to that thought. And in the last year of her life, she could play the piano. She didn't have full use of her left hand, but she had pretty good use of it, and she was able to play the piano. She was able to walk. She had recovered her power of speech. So many things that she had recovered in that time of going through all those years of just having one thing after another taken from her. And I think more than anything that stands out to me is her absolute clarity and determination and lack of fear. Lack of fear. She's always focused on what was possible, what she could do, what she was headed for. And she was unafraid of what was going on in her body. She had that absolute faith that she's being carried forward into something good. Didn't mean that she wasn't in pain and she didn't have difficulties. She did. But she had that determination there. What an incredible lesson. I know, projecting my own self into her spot, I would have given up. I would have been, yeah, overwhelmed with all the things. And she never did. Sometimes, yeah, sometimes you can have a generalized fear, but you're not even sure, you can't even name it, other than say there's this kind of terror that's lurking in the unconscious mind. You know, we've all lived many, many lives, and through that we've had these experiences, and sometimes we can not even be conscious of it, and suddenly something will trigger this just terrific fear inside of ourselves. And so this underlying faith that we can take from the saints and from the God-conscious masters, that this light exists within us, and the faith that the spiritual masters are there to help us, that just hanging on to that can help us to encounter that fear and work our way through that fear. And that they too worked through their fears. They too had to go through that, and somehow they found a way to do it. And if we hang on to that light, that it may not be pretty and it may not be easy, but we'll work our way through it. And by fixing our mind on the light rather than the fear, we draw ourselves through that fear and we come out on the other side.
So you don't actually have to make the fear small enough to deal with it, you can just go right through it.
Right through it. And that thought that the light is greater than the darkness. And that, for instance, this is one way of thinking about it. A room can be encased in darkness for 1,000 years. After 1,000 years, somebody walks in to that room and carries a bright light with them. The darkness is gone in a nanosecond, literally the speed of light. 186,300 miles per second. The darkness is gone. Just like that. The light and the darkness cannot coexist. So the moment you bring light into that situation, the darkness cannot exist.
But all the things that happened in the darkness they disappear too.
And to what effect? So let's take the example of
scurrying to the corners is what I see, and they're still there.
Let's take the example of Saint Anthony. He was living in Egypt. Before he was Saint Anthony, he was just Tony, guy hanging out in the neighborhood, you know. And he went to church one day, and they read from the scriptures that you're supposed to sell everything, give it to the poor, and follow Jesus. Well, he's kind of a literal kind of guy, so he actually did this. He went home. His parents had left him with extensive properties. He sold everything. He gave it to the poor. And he went out to these caves. After a while, he kind of got famous. People were coming out to see him. And he thought, this is too intrusive. I'm going to go to even more less accessible places. He went into these tombs in Egypt. Well, if you know what they did oftentimes, they took kings and all of their slaves. Well, if the king was dead, all right for the king, but they took all the slaves who were alive, all the servants, everybody, and they buried them alive, thinking that the king was going to need his servants and his slaves when he got to the other side. So they should send them all, you know, as a group tour kind of thing. And a lot of times there is huge terror, of course, as is happening, by the people who are living, who are being buried alive. And this room being sealed up and gradually oxygen diminishing, and they're in pure darkness. Saint Anthony chose one of these places to go meditate. So he's there, and he is having a battle of his life. He is encountering these spirits. They actually physically beat him up. They beat him unconscious. At one point, there's a fellow who is bringing food out to him, and Saint Anthony didn't come out for several days to get his food, so he went in after him, probably not a very pleasant task, and he found him literally beat up and unconscious. He hauled him out, he took him back to the town in northern Egypt there, and he was dead. He was laying out there, and that next morning they were going to cremate him, or however they disposed of the body there. During the middle of the night, he came back into body consciousness again. He got to the fellow who had been helping him to help him to go back out, and he did battle again against these forces. And on it went. And there would be this fellow who brought out food, that there would be terrible loud screams that were not St. Anthony's going on in there. There was terrible forces against him. And he overcame them. And there, in the midst of this darkness, and in the midst of these terrible forces working against him, was this Christ light that came and illuminated all of this internal cavern where he is doing this battle. And so, because of his own tenacity, because of his own ability to overcome his fears, this light came in and totally wiped out all the darkness and all those oppositional forces that were there.
Because he stuck to it.
Wasn't easy, didn't happen overnight, but he was absolutely determined. And he would not give in to his own fears, as I'm sure he must have felt fear at different times, but he didn't give in to them. He hung on. And so sometimes it's just an endurance contest, but where we lose it is when our mind runs with the fear. And we let ourselves, you know, it's like if we're walking in the dark through the woods and the wind blows and a bush turns into a bear and a snake turns into a snake, or a stick turns into a snake. And the next thing we find, we're running because we're so scared. And because we're running without being able to see where we go, we fall into a ditch and really hurt ourselves. Now, what's really hurt us has been the fear.
Yeah.
So as Franklin Delano Roosevelt said, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. So we may experience fear, we may have fear in encountering these things, but it's hanging in there. It's having that determination, it's having that faith in that light and in the spiritual masters that are protecting us. And it's not that we don't experience fear, but we don't give in to it. And we hang in there. And what we find is, like when Sri Yukteswar went to the closet and faced the ghost in the closet, he saw there was nothing there. When we look fear straight in the face, and this is kind of playing the scenario all the way out in our life, well, what if I did die in a car or a plane wreck? And so what? And I play it out to all the way to its natural conclusion. And I go, well, you know, I would still be there. My body's life would be done with, but I would continue on. And because I've looked at fear in the face, I find that it's a phantom. It's not that those things may not happen. It's not that we might not grow older. It's not that our eyesight may not get weaker. All those things may be objective realities, but there's still anything to be afraid of. And when we look at it squarely, we say, no. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Here now.
Let's go on.
Okay.
Let's go on.
If it happens again, I'll go on again.
And we'll go on again.
Yeah.
And if it results in the losing of this body, then so be it. We'll accept that as divine will and we'll move on from there. It didn't stop us before.
Like she said, you keep your spirit. Even if you lose your mind, you still keep your spirit.
That's right. That's right. The light, Krishna, and actually all the saints and all the prophets, all the avatars, guarantee us the same. The light cannot be diminished within us, no matter, and that includes our bad actions. No matter how bad we are or what life brings to us, the life cannot be diminished, it cannot be stayed, it cannot be snuffed out. Cannot. It's unaffected by all of those things. Krishna says it this way, it's like the ocean that constantly has rivers running into it, but it never gets overfilled. So we have life experience always running into us, but it never overfills us. And our spirit remains unchanged in the midst of it all. And at first we take that on faith, but when we come to realize it, then there's nothing that can rock us. There's nothing that can move us from that position. Our body may react out of a startle effect or out of a reaction to a moment, but fear doesn't have any foothold in us whatsoever. That startle reaction just passes from us. That's reflex. But it has no hold on us because we're established in that consciousness.
That's where I want to go.
Yes. And as Papa says, it's living without fear. And every opportunity, everything that comes along in our life that produces some fear in us, is an opportunity for us to practice our sadhana. It's an opportunity to practice that fearlessness, to rely on that light within us, to affirm that there is enough in this world, and no matter what happens, we'll be all right. Of our own spiritual essence, it's an opportunity, every one of those fears that come up. And one of the things that I think is very helpful is always see the fear as leaving you. Whenever fear gets triggered inside of you by a circumstance, see it as an opportunity that's been residing in the unconscious mind in a latent state, and it's been activated into the conscious mind, and it's an opportunity, you're seeing it leave. And one of the things you can do is see the light just above you and in front of you, and see that fear or that negativity just going into the light, and seeing yourself giving it away, surrendering it to the light, giving it to the light. And this is an opportunity to purify the unconscious mind. Anything in the basement has to be carried out through the main floor before it's thrown into the trash incinerator. The trash incinerator is the spiritual light. The main floor is your conscious mind. The basement is your subconscious mind. You're cleaning it out. It's coming out into the conscious mind, into the incinerator, into the light.
So you have to keep doing it over and over? Because I had a dream once, and I just, it was kill my body, save my mind, do this, and everything. Mm-hmm. I was fine, do it, I'm still here, mm-hmm. It doesn't matter.
Right.
And I just really felt that way, but then I go through life, and then stuff keeps coming up,
If there's more, that means there's been more. And it's just another box got opened in the basement. It's getting carried out now. Doesn't mean that the other box wasn't carried out. It's just a similar looking label on the box.
So you just keep dealing with it over and over?
Until it's gone.
Charmy
instead of Charmy. And the other part of our sadhana is that we try not to feed new fodder for the basement, that we don't induce new fears, that we're not hanging on or creating new fears. So we're always in the process of letting go and getting rid of it and not producing new ones. And if we do that, the subconscious will get purified and it will change and we'll feel the difference. We'll start to feel lighter.
What you're talking about the same as what the Bible talks about, the skeletons,
the graves will be open,
yes,
in the final days.
Is that
yeah.
The same thing?
That's the subconscious, the ghosts are those things of the past coming out of the subconscious mind, which are the graves. And so during that part of the mystical crucifixion is an opening up of all these things. All with the intent that it's purifying the mind, the consciousness.
Cleaning it out.
And it can be pretty yucky, pretty stiff stuff to have to take a look at. But hanging on to that light will always have the strength, will always have the ability to do it.
Sometimes you dip pretty deep to the toes.
Yeah. You want to get your hip waders on, but even that doesn't protect you totally. But it does, we're really dealing with lifetimes worth of material here. And so it can be tough things to look at, either things that were done to us or things that when we existed in a different consciousness, we did to others. We don't have to seek them out, but sometimes those things just come to us.
They find
us. Yeah. And again, with the attitude that they're leaving us. They're leaving us. See, if we go, oh, man, I was that, and we hang on to it and we go, oh, I just can't stand the idea that I was that. We're actually hanging on to it. We're giving it power. We're giving it energy. We're holding on to it.
One of the situations with me is I look at that
And then if you see yourself as throwing it into the light, surrendering it into the light, then you're letting it go. Then you're not reinventing it or giving it more power or energy.
So that leaves more room for the light inside you.
That's right.
Yeah, for that box, the more light.
Because you're doing two things. One is you're releasing that negativity, but we're also always feeding the subconscious mind. But what are you feeding the subconscious mind? The light. So not only are you letting go of the old, but you're bringing in that new light into the unconscious. And after a while, that's what's recycling through, is the light. And then after a while, there's only light and light and light. And that's when the purification is complete. I think one of the things that I hope to do in this talk is to clarify that, you know, sometimes people get on the spiritual path and we're told to be fearless, and certainly that's the goal. But sometimes people think, oh, I'm the only one who experiences these fears. And that's just simply not true. That being on the spiritual path means letting go of those fears, confronting them, looking at them, moving through them. And it is a part of our spiritual path to move through those fears and to experience those fears. And it's not as if we've made a huge wrong turn or, you know, we've fallen in some way because we're experiencing some fears. It's inevitable. And in one way of thinking about it, in terms of emptying out our subconscious mind, it's preferable. Doesn't mean we have to go around creating fears, but we can see it from a positive point of view, that this is part of our spiritual path. And to let go of them and purify them is an extremely good thing. And to be fearless in encountering our fears. You know, Papa didn't necessarily tell the whole story when he was writing in The Vision of God and In Quest of God. He in his previous life to taking sannyas, he had been terrified of snakes. And in the cave where I stayed, where he had written In Quest of God, a snake had come in and wrapped himself around his leg and was looking at his toe. Now, to me, it only adds interest to the idea that in that ecstatic state, he had no fear of that snake whatsoever. But it adds interest to the story to me that he did have snakes phobia or fear of snakes before that. And what an overcoming. It adds significance to the fact that in that state, he was not afraid of the snake at all.
And then that continued.
Yeah.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to come down out of that state and see the snake wrapped around and your phobia comes back.
Because once you've faced it, it doesn't tend to bother you anymore.
Once the fear is faced, but it may be facing it on deeper and deeper levels, so it's a fear that seems to come back even though you've faced it before, because you're taking it on a deeper, more profound level.
So it's got a different label on it.
Yeah. Even though it looks like maybe the same thing. And you think, didn't I deal with this already?
Yeah.
You did, but this is a little variation of it. And you're taking a little deeper swath at it in terms of cleansing the subconscious mind. Sometimes if we're only able to do a little, we're just given a little. And then we go through some experience in life, and then we're able to take more, and we're given more. And so it's just we're being given what we're able to deal with at that time. So it seems to have the same label on it, but it's a little different package. And it can seem tougher because of that, because we've grown, we can take it on a deeper level. And it actually seems, I seem to be getting worse here instead of better. You know, I'm supposed to be progressing spiritually, and this stuff seems to be tougher for me to deal with. And it's because we can take on something that's more difficult. Well, it depends on what you're going to define as spiritual.
Just not feeling energized.
Sometimes your consciousness is being directed into finer bodies and constructing the consciousness in those more refined bodies. And because of that, there's not as much energy available towards the physical plane in the physical body at that time.
The feeling of being.
Because you're doing work on more subtle planes, and you're not always even aware of it, but when you're released from that, suddenly you have a resurgence of life force into this physical body. But it is because at that time you're doing work on a more subtle plane.
So it's not a matter of not doing the job properly, it's a matter of just where you're at.
Yeah, we still try to do the job properly, but sometimes we have to take that into account. And sometimes during intense spiritual experiences, we're not really capable of operating in the world at all in the way that we're used to. And we may need extra help and support during that time, because we're just not able to do those things. And because of our material mind and material minds around us, we sometimes think, well, I'm inadequate, or I'm just not doing this right, or something terrible is wrong. When the reality is we're operating in these more subtle planes, and that's where our attention, that's where our energy is going to. And at those times, it's, you know, it's as when Mother went to Anandashram and went through those mystical crucifixion, she needed that support of the ashram. She needed that support of Papa and the others who were there. If she were just operating in her own life in the Western world, hard to tell what would have been the result of that. Not good. So she needed that support, and she needed that time to go through those experiences. And Mother said, asked Papa one time, well, what about somebody who doesn't have you, Papa? And he says, well, God will always surely take care of such a one. So it's been a difficult adjustment on my part that I've not always been able to operate in the world in the way that I've been used to. And it's required of me that I've let go of that, and that's been a subject of humility. That'll be a subject for another night, maybe tonight's fear, but teaching me humility about when God decides to do something, then all I can really do is cooperate to the best of my ability. Okay, let's do an ending prayer. Oh, Heavenly Father.
Oh, Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
Of thy glorious presence.
In every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
and surrender myself to Thee.
And surrender myself to Thee.
I feel the power of Thy perfection.
I feel the power of Thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence.
My mind and my intelligence.
Are radiant with Thy healing light.
Are radiant with Thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with Thee.
Of my communion with Thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Peace.
Peace.
Bliss.